The Hard Shoulder.
With Nissan. Number one for petrol in Ireland. Number one for electric. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
This is News Talk.
Now, we're moving on to talk about Theresa May. In recent weeks, there has been some talk about her resilience when it comes to getting a deal across the line in terms of Brexit. She has survived a no-confidence vote. She seems to be never really off our television screens. And we saw last week she undertook a whistle-stop tour around Europe. But it got us thinking about this type of personality. And believe it or not, there's actually a name for it. And it's called hubris syndrome. Now, I have to admit, I wasn't aware of this syndrome. But to enlighten me, I'm joined in studio by Brendan Kelly, Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin. Brendan, thanks for coming in to talk to us. What is it? Hubris syndrome, am I pronouncing that correctly?
You're pronouncing it correctly. It's a characteristic set of behaviours or attitudes or kind of patterns of thinking that has been described in a set of politicians, particularly high-achieving politicians, who appear somewhat immune to the criticisms of others and can somehow carry on with what seem like supernatural levels of resilience in situations so chaotic and difficult and pressured that most of us would simply fold, we think, if we were placed in that situation. So hubris syndrome, it was really devised by David Owen, who is a medical doctor, a member of the House of Lords and UK Foreign Secretary. And it describes people who have a sort of a messianic zeal. They almost conflate themselves with their nation or their country or their mission. You know, they become the country. And this seems to be a necessary psychological technique in order to get through incredibly difficult and incredibly messy political situations.
So do you think Theresa May has this syndrome?
Well, that's a very good question. And there is an extremely acute and extremely relevant ethical rule in psychiatry and for doctors that we're not allowed to diagnose any public figure with anything.
Oh, really?
That's considered to be unethical because we haven't examined the person. What is clear with the syndrome is that most high-achieving politicians, and that's really those who manage to survive at all, have a lot of these features. This overconfidence, this almost narcissistic belief in themselves that keeps them going, even when all the evidence is against them and all the events of history are against them. They tend to appeal to a higher court to justify their actions, maybe not the electorate, but they say history will judge them well, even if they're not getting on too good at present, or maybe that God is on their side and that God will judge them well. And this is a way psychologically of avoiding the rather damning judgments that might be passed on them at the moment by the electorate or by the media.
So is it just complete cockiness or narcissism?
Well, it's a kind of cockiness and narcissism that is rewarded by because it helps gain you political power. Most politicians are a little bit grandiose. They believe in themselves a little bit more than they should, and they're rewarded for this by getting elected or by remaining elected or attaining high office. So there is, if you like, a survival purpose in this. The problem is when these people get to the very top, and the usual checks and balances that keep them in tow are less. When they're so high at the top of the pyramid, they are virtually on their own.
So surrounded by yes men or yes women, like that kind of a
absolutely.
Setup.
Absolutely. And perhaps not even listening to them and not following the usual nuts and bolts of policy making. In other words, taking irrational decisions, making statements of various sorts in the middle of the night and other such things.
I'm taking to Twitter. OK, let's move on to Donald Trump. We can't have this conversation without referring to him.
So there is this rule called the Goldwater rule, where psychiatrists and psychologists cannot comment on any named politician. What's been interesting in the US is the number of psychiatrists and psychologists that have abandoned this rule. And I don't agree with what they're doing. I don't think it's right. But they draw a very interesting analogy. They say that sticking to this rule that prevents speaking out, they say it's a bit like if there's a librarian and a fireman rushes into the library and says, there's a fire. And she says, hush, you're not allowed to talk in the library.
That's a very good analogy. Tell me how they came up with this hubris syndrome, or what a body of research went in to try and come up with these characteristics.
Well, David Owen and Jonathan Davidson studied the political statements and actions of dozens of politicians over the course of history, some dead, some alive, and looked at things like the language that they tend to use in their speeches, their apparent decision-making processes, and they looked at some quite subtle things like their use of the word I versus the use of the word we. So when they start to sort of identify with their country or with their cause, they looked at the extent to which they consulted with others or lost touch with their usual advisors, even the yes men when they pushed them out. And they looked at the nature or content of their policy decisions. Did they lead to self-aggrandizement only, or did they pursue legitimate policy goals? And they presumed, they came to the conclusion that many of them have features of what they now call this hubris syndrome.
Now, it's not only confined to politicians.
No, absolutely not. I mean, to be honest, it's difficult to know if it really is a syndrome. It's a collection of behaviours that appears particularly common in politicians, possibly because politics rewards this way of behaving through the acquisition of power. But of course, people listening will undoubtedly recognise these things in people they know, or maybe even themselves. Overconfidence, narcissism, not really listening to others, a disregard for details in the interest of boosting your self-image. I think we all do a bit of that, and it's probably just a matter of degree as to whether we call it a
syndrome. So it's degrees of delusion, really, then?
Yeah, it's to do with losing contact with reality. And we all lose contact with reality a little bit in relation to ourselves. Our self-images are mainly fantasy, but it's more interesting in politicians because when they lose touch with reality, they tend to do so quite spectacularly and with consequences for everybody else. So maybe that's why the syndrome is located in politics in the first instance, although most of us could point to people in our lives who are certainly hubristic.
And does it always lead to someone's downfall? Like, as in, once, you know, like, can you kind of have the syndrome and manage to work through it, or eventually will it cause your downfall?
No, I mean, I think you can have this and work through it once you keep a certain awareness that this can happen to you. It's difficult to know with politicians because, as they say, all political careers end in failure ultimately. So it's difficult to know what causes that. But no, it is possible to have this. And I think with an awareness of it, and this is really the point of describing it, that having an awareness of this tendency in politicians and in others will help people to manage it and maybe prevent it causing their downfall and causing the kind of harm and bad decision making that it can cause in political life.
And also in big companies, is it something that, it, you know, is it, are people well aware that this is the syndrome, that people, you know, top CEOs, people as they get to the top of their game in whatever industry it is, that it could start to affect them and therefore affect business?
No, it absolutely could. And it was the behaviour of CEOs really that triggered the thought that this might be a syndrome. But the problem with the CEOs is the same as with the top level politicians, that there might be an awareness of it, but it's incredibly difficult to put into place a way of managing it, because the very essence of it is a loss of contact with reality to a certain extent, a loss of belief in one's advisors, and a desire to shake free from the usual constraints that keep our behaviour within limits. So when you're a CEO and you're at the very, very top of that pyramid, there aren't that many people around you to tell you that you've gone a little bit over the line on this one. And if they do tell you, you can just fire them.
It's very interesting. We started this conversation talking about Theresa May and we don't have much time left. But what do you make of her resilience that we've seen, just in terms from a psychological point of view? It, you know, like, it's gas that she's able to still get up and still go. I mean, when you see her in the House of Commons and people are roaring at her and shouting at her, it's very surprising to see that she has that mettle still, doesn't she?
My view on resilience is we all have loads of it. We don't know how much of it we have
until we are tested.
Mm. And it's very difficult to understand someone's position, particularly such a highly pressured position with so many different factors at play. I reckon that if, for example, you were in that position, you'd find deep, deep wells of resilience that would get you through it just as well as anybody else.
I'd have thrown in the towel about 6 months ago and I would now live in Barbados. I can tell you that. Brendan Kelly, Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin, thanks so much for coming in to talk to us on The Hard